This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Just a quick note, this podcast contains some explicit language. So, Sheldon, there's this song. I kind of need your opinion about it. Let's hear just a little tiny bit. Maybe we should start with the chorus. These beautiful things that I've got, please stay. I want you, I need you, oh God, don't take. I'm playing you Beautiful Things by Benson Boone. Not only because it is a massive global hit that has been on the charts for several weeks and was a viral TikTok sensation before then, but because I cannot get this freaking song out of my head, and I also cannot tell if it is awesome or awful. Can you help me out here, Sheldon?
Yeah, I certainly don't think it's awesome. You know, despite spending considerable time on TikTok, I am not well-versed in the Noah Kahn extended universe.
And we must say Benson Boone is definitely an extension of the Noah Kahn phenomenon. He's outdoorsy, he's young, he's cute, he cares about emotions, all those things.
Exactly. And I likely would not have heard this song if you hadn't brought it up to me.
Sorry.
I'm not sure if I should be thanking you or like wagging my fist, but you know, I feel like this is sort of kind of the wide empty song that you can project nearly any of your feelings into, wow. Which is why it seems to appeal to such a wide swath of people. And I get it. I like a lot of those songs too. This one kind of loses me, especially with that chorus that we just heard.
You don't feel like it's like, you know, James Taylor suddenly becoming Chris Cornell, like the Hulk, you know? That's kind of what I feel like it's like.
Well, that might be exactly why it's not working for me. But I am curious to hear what it's doing for you.
Well, you know, I think it's a combination of a couple things. Discovering it on TikTok, both from Benson Boone's own TikToks and, you know, he's a cute young guy with a fashionable mustache.
Never hurts.
But then also watching people kind of like mime catharsis.
Yeah.
It's always fun. There's a lot of enthusiasm there, and that's really enjoyable. And then I also just have to say, I think it was partly the return of the grunge howl.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a woman of a certain age, as I like to say, and that age would be the 90s. So maybe it's just nostalgia.
I mean, I do get that. It feels like it's not the same sort of like raw expression of feeling as some of that older stuff. It feels to me kind of like the thing that was geared like specifically for top 40 radio airplay in like the early 2010s.
Yes.
And so it's kind of funny to me that he signed to the Imagine Dragons guy.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say that it's like it's refreshing. So much of TikTok music feels like specifically geared for TikTok. And this feels like it's for the wider world beyond and not just for that platform, which I think is interesting.
Maybe it'll be a new phase for TikTok hits. We'll just have to see. Benson Boone carrying us into a new epoch, you know, rather like Ted Neely in Jesus Christ Superstar. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. Another thing he reminds me of. But
we'll have to see.
Anyway, I'm Ann Powers, critic and correspondent for NPR Music.
And I'm Sheldon Pierce, editor at NPR Music.
And we are gathered here today not to spend an hour discussing the value of cute young mustachioed guys on TikTok, but to sample some of the most interesting new music that's out today, March 1st, because it is New Music Friday. You know, Sheldon, what I'm thinking about this week, what came to mind while I was listening to the records we're going to talk about, is this idea of tone. Tone is this kind of ineffable quality of a person's voice or instrument. It's like vibe, but not exactly. I wonder, what do you think about that term, tone?
I always think of it as the quality that is distinct about whatever instrument the person is using, the personality of it, the texture of it, the way that it sort of washes over you and makes you feel. It always has a sort of distinct quality that separates an artist from other artists, I think.
Does tone go deep or does it just stay on the surface? I wonder what you think about that.
You know, I probably would say it does sort of stay on the surface. Do you feel differently?
Well, I think that's something we can explore while we talk about the records that are out this week. And in fact, I think a great release to ground our conversation is the first one we have up to talk about today. It's a new album by Faye Webster, and it's called Underdressed at the Symphony.
I want to see you in my dreams, but then forget.
Has also had several big TikTok songs, most recently the Lush song I Know. And this album doesn't really deviate from her past releases that much, I think, but it does hold together really nicely as a work. I mean, it's a very solid, complete feeling, listening experience. So if you're into Faye Webster as a TikTok artist, I recommend spending a little time like chilling out with her whole vibe. And I think you're a fan, aren't you, Sheldon?
I am. I'm a big fan. I think she's sort of really locked into the sort of energy that she's been moving towards on the past three records specifically. I do think this record is maybe her least lyrical full length of her career. On sometimes she's saying, I got too much time. What else is there to do now? Overanalyze things I don't really care about. And her songs functioned in that same way. They were sort of deeply analytical. The writing was always very pithy, but it was also like effusive and almost poetic. Mm-hmm. I think often of, he's awake the whole time that I'm asleep. Maybe that's why I don't see him in my dreams.
Wow.
But these songs have the same yearning and like the same musing introspection. Like on Wanna Quit All the Time, she sings, overthinking in my head again, I'm good at making shit negative. But I think here the introspection is more pointed, like less flowery and like less narratively focused.
That's interesting. You were saying you think it's the least lyrical of her releases, but you're saying that in a positive way, it sounds like.
Yeah, there's a lyric on that same song. She's like, I used to be self-conscious. Well, really, I still am. I'm just better at figuring out why.
Ah.
And I think that like reflects an understanding and a perception. There's like maybe less focus on what she's saying, but more focus on the way that her songs are structured and what they are doing around her voice.
Ah.
To me, the simplicity here only contributes to like this growing splendor and like focus in her songs.
That sounds like you're talking about tone, I have to say. I mean, one thing I love, I know I'm hammering home a point, I realize that, but one thing that's always attracted me about Faye Webster is her singing style itself and the seeming effortlessness, but then I think it's very conscientious, is that the right word? Like there's a distance in what she does.
Yeah.
While there's also this warmth, it's very paradoxical. It's like she's very careful to give us a listening experience that we can relax into or something like that.
Yeah. Operating at a distance does feel like her like traditional mode, but like you said, there is like this sort of subtle beauty to it that gives it this warmth that's hard to explain. She's never too close to you, but she's also never too far away. which is like, it creates this like very pleasant balance, given the way that her song like operates at this intersection of like Americana and like R&B music.
And yacht rock, somebody put the yacht rock label on this one. It kind of leans into that sound, which complements her sort of quietly decadent worldview.
Yeah, yeah.
I think. But she's from Atlanta. She's based in Atlanta. And, you know, I have to say, maybe this is obvious to fans of Faye Webster, but I feel like she's really been nurtured by the whole vibe and scene and tone of the Atlanta scene, because there's a way what she's doing is very much in the indie rock tradition, but then it also connects to the hip hop sound of Atlanta too, right?
Yeah, I mean, she's been sort of adjacent to the rap community her entire career. She and Little Yachty actually went to middle school together.
That's so
cute. She used
to
shoot photos for local rappers like Offset and Killer Mike. And she was closely associated with Awful Records for a time. Mm. I've always thought she had this like innate understanding of the ways that Southern music forms are distinctively interlinked and exactly how her sound was like a product of those connections. To me, it's funny that Yachty is featured on this, because I think he's finally starting to synthesize his music in the same way. And they are operating in different modes, but they both seem to be moving towards similar ideas.
Yeah, they duet really well together. I mean, like, they complement each other perfectly, intuitively.
Yeah, when he shows up on the back half of that song, Lego Ring, initially it's like, oh. But then it's like, oh, that's actually really, really pleasant. I do think they are running parallel in a sort of interesting way.
Right.
And it's nice to see them sort of come full circle as like former classmates, now stars.
I also think she connects to what's happening with a lot of women in indie music right now, who are sort of critiquing the pop machine in these sideways ways. You know, Caroline Polachek, for example, or the duo Smears. Even St. Vincent in a kind of a distant way. I mean, Faye Webster sounds nothing like St. Vincent, but, you know, there's a way in which that distance, that slight ice in what she does, even despite all the warmth, kind of reminds me of Annie Clark and reminds me about Annie's always overthinking or conceptualizing, even as she's offering us, like, rock and roll catharsis. I mean, there's songs on this record with names like eBay purchase history that then, you know, have very lush romantic sound. And to me, that's that expressing that double consciousness of what it means to be a woman kind of living through consumer culture, you know?
It's interesting you talk about the sort of lushness. I think this album is even lusher than her previous ones.
Great.
I'm not sure she could have made a song like He Loves Me Yeah before doing the car therapy sessions that she did in 2022, which added ornamental flourishes to previously released songs, including like turning the sleepy Johnny into an orchestral suite.
Right.
Like, eBay purchase history brings like her quiet songcraft to heightened focus with this like stunning crispness almost. And the title track feels like accumulation of everything she's done. I think even that title hints at this idea that you're talking about, this remove.
Right.
This like being supremely competent, but also like standing at a distance from the whole machine of it.
Right. Critiquing the very emotions she's expressing, because she realizes that they're partly created by influences like pop music itself. And that's the thing about He Loves Me, You know, it seems like just this fun love song, but then in the end, what's the line? It's something like, I love the way he holds me down.
I really like the way he holds me down. I pick his face out when he's in the crowd. He pumps my gas so that I don't get out. My baby loves me, he loves me, yeah. I think we're perfect, yeah, we're perfect, yeah. My baby loves me, yeah. My baby loves me, yeah. My baby loves me, yeah.
that's Faye Webster, Underdressed at the Symphony, a record that both you and I strongly recommend. But Sheldon, you got something for us now. What'd you bring in?
Yeah, so for the first time in 5 years, there's a new Schoolboy Q album. The TDE rapper's latest is called Blue Lips. And it builds on past albums, but embraces sort of new lifestyle choices.
Like damn, why I get a bitch like yearn? I'm a drop top nigga, the sun won't burn when it lit like white, but the stripes ain't earned. I'ma get it right now, I ain't waiting no turn. Got a brand new house, trying to avoid my hurt. About 6 point something in the field like church. Or the hood got whack and the set went turn. Got a 488 in the glide like Kurt. I've been living off golf from the last.
I don't think Q gets enough credit for his role in like revigorating the sound of West Coast rap. Mm. It's easy to forget he was out of the starting blocks faster than Kendrick.
They came from the same crew, right?
Yeah, they're both TDE rappers. They both were initially in a group called Black Hippie with Absol and J-Rock. And as a unit, they played a huge role in sort of the revitalization of West Coast gangster rap in the early, mid-2010s. Schoolboy, I mean, he was on a great run until his last album, Crash Talk, which was sort of underwhelming. Hmm. But this album is a bit of a return to form for him. I love the way it sort of balances soul sampling and like slapping lowrider music across its whole sort of soundscape. He is playing into those with like very dynamic vocal performances. And I'm curious what you make of this record.
I mean, I really like it. I do love the way that the production complements what he's bringing as a rapper. I feel like it's a little, I don't know, somber is the wrong word. That's not a word that applies very well to Schoolboy Q. But maybe it's just more humid than,
yeah.
That's also a bad word for anyone from Los Angeles. There's no humidity there. I don't know what it is. Like, there's a little bit of heaviness here or something. I know the title.
I do think there is something about it that's somber. I think he is, like, a wacky enough character
right.
that it never gets bogged down in that. And he is, like, in constant motion, so you never really have time to, like, mire in the feelings. But there is a darkness, I think, that hangs over most of his music.
My neck piece looking like pears. The Maybach, me and her mare. I look down, nigga, that's scared. The rat tails need to get buried. You're hanging on to it now, barely.
The title, Blue Lips, refers to silence or a period of sort of contemplation or pulling back, which might just be a nice PR spin on my not last record didn't do that well.
Right. You know. It's funny. I mean, Crash Talk was his most hollow album, one he even admitted left him feeling empty.
Hmm.
I don't believe narrative songwriting and rap is any better than pop songwriting, but I do think that his catalog is sort of most interesting in that mode.
Hmm.
Thinking about Groovy Tony, Eddie Kane, and most of the stuff on Blank Face.
Right.
Thinking about Break the Bank and Nightmare on Fig Street. I still don't think this record is as narratively focused as his best stuff, but he does seem to be more introspective on this record, thinking particularly about his relationship to celebrity culture, thinking about his upward mobility, and so on.
I'm glad you mentioned his relationship to his own persona, because I was doing a little research on Schoolboy Q and noticed that he has a beef with nerds. He has talked about how he doesn't like nerds, but I think he is a nerd. Like his tone, his vocal style, it's got something about it that just, maybe it's the kind of way he's grounded in the Nas, Jay-Z style. It feels very like classical in a sense, but also he has that goofy elasticity to his voice that you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. As a nerd, I'm not sure I would think of Schoolboy Q as a nerd, but there is something about his voice. I remember years ago, Tom Bryan once wrote that Q was an unpredictable presence that seemed to be rapping for his own amusement. And that seems to be true of this record as any other ones. I mean, some of the performances are just like baffling. The woozy, stumbling flows of Nunu.
Yeah.
And like croaked bars of Back in Love.
This a love triangle like where Bermuda is.
on a mission, be the voice of 20,000 kids.
It's hard to know what he'll do next with his voice, which I think is maybe one of the more thrilling things about the way that his songs function.
Well, what do you think about the features on this record? He's got some old friends, Absol's on here. He's got Freddie Gibbs on here on a song that I really like, Ohio. So interesting to hear the contrast in their rapping styles.
Gotta catch up to my levels, try to stay black, young fella. Almost died twice, but let's get it. Got an A-Max with no limits. Getting hit in Paris, that's different. I done hit the world, my crippin'. I done leveled up my living. I ain't dance around in no skillet.
The juxtaposition of him and Freddie Gibbs is particularly interesting. Freddie Gibbs always raps in such a straight line.
Yeah.
He is so hyper-technical, so focused, so... It's not a rigidity, but there's like an elasticity to the way that he moves directly forward.
Yeah, he reminds me kind of like a guy at the gym who does a million reps, you know, very gracefully, but at the same time, like, he's going to get through those 150 reps.
100%.
Niggas coming for the crown, crown, crown. Time to shut shit down. Time to set shit down. Chevy pedal to the ground. Everybody wanna try to kill a rabbit. Now you like a nigga now. Dust ball niggas by the nigga style. Style. So I gotta keep switching up. 10 plus running millions up. I don't like that 57.
And Schoolboy Q is like, could not be sort of further from that. He's the oddball, like bouncing around in all directions.
Right, jumping on the treadmill, getting on the elliptical, gonna go jump in the pool.
Got me a rolling, my roots in the soap. Down on the bottom, my president gold. Dancing a pussy and coming a throat. Set better clear when I open the door. Come get a hello, I get on the floor. Nigga, you pussy, you know where to go.
And so, like, hearing them sort of try to play off one another is a really interesting contrast. They are both sort of, like, gangster rappers of the same persuasion, which is funny. It's funny to hear them operate in such different capacities.
Be with the presence and be with the load. Something's funny, you might be the joke. Nigga, you pussy, you know where to go.
That's Schoolboy Q with his new album, Blue Lips.
We're going to take a quick break. But first, in case you haven't heard, you can support our work and public radio with NPR Music Plus. When you sign up, you can get access to a special feed of this show where you can listen to all our episodes sponsor-free. You also get to listen to Robin Hilton's All Songs Considered and our sister show, Alt Latino, sponsor-free. But don't worry, nothing is changing. NPR Music Plus is just another way to show your support of public media and get some extra perks, too. So please sign up. You can find out more at plus.npr.org/NPR Music or search for NPR Music in Apple Podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lagunitas Brewing Company. Since 1993, Lagunitas has been challenging the status quo, brewing innovative beer, and crafting stories along the way. Featuring a wide range of craft brews, cult classics, and non-alcoholic options, there's a seat at the bar for everyone. Bring the dog, too. Lagunitas Brewing Company. Because every great song deserves a great beer. It's good to have friends. Learn more at Lagunitas.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who switch could save hundreds on car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we have very important people on our show and then ask them about very unimportant things. Here's U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
We are also reliably informed that among your enthusiasms, in addition to macroeconomic policy, is mobile games.
There's some truth in that.
Join us for the NPR podcast that considers all the other things. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
And we're back. I'm Ann Powers, and I'm hanging out here with Sheldon Pierce from NPR Music, and we're talking about some great records that have come out today, March 1st, and the next one that we're going to talk about is by the guitarist Julian Lage. It's called Speak to Me. It's his 15th album as a leader. his first working with someone who I love very much, the singer-songwriter and all-around brilliant mind, Joe Henry. What can you say about Julian Lage? The guy, he was a child prodigy. He's recorded with some of the greatest jazz musicians who have ever lived, like Gary Burton and John Zorn, worked with them a lot. He just is a player that has so much personality as an instrumentalist. I really love his style because there's a kind of like brashness and humor always in his style. And here he's working with a pretty big band, but Sheldon, I really hear him constantly shining and breaking through on this record. Maybe that's, I feel like that's a dumb thing to say, honestly. Of course he's shining on this record. It's his record. But what I mean is he's, I don't know, he's like the guy in the party that just always makes you laugh, you know?
It's funny because jazz guitarists traditionally have not been my bag. I've always been partial to horns, but...
Not a Wes Montgomery fan.
Not really.
Not a Bill Frisell fan.
Bill Frisell, okay. You got me there. This album is so expressive. You talk about personality of his playing. To me, he has like almost this sassiness
that
like cuts through the virtuosity. It's always interesting to sort of be exposed to a grown-up prodigy later in life. In a case like this, I feel like you can almost hear the years of accumulated wisdom. And it's like he is super talented, but it doesn't feel like he takes his music super seriously.
Right.
Which I really, really appreciate it. Honestly, he sounds like he's enjoying himself playing with his band on this record.
I feel like we can really hear that on the track Northern Shuffle, which is really like a soul jazz stomper. So let's talk about the band a little bit because, you know, he's got some people on this band he's played with a lot, like Dave King, the drummer from The Bad Plus, and the bassist Jorge Roeder. But then also Joe Henry's son Levon is on here playing horns, and there's two keyboard players. And to my ears, they couldn't be more different. On the one hand, you have Chris Davis, who's a fantastic composer, super innovative, connected to classical music, often called cerebral. But, you know, also a very emotional player in her own way, but like a really intricate player, you know?
Yeah.
And then you also have Patrick Warren, who is known for his session work. He's played with everyone from Amy Mann to Fiona Apple to guys like Dylan and Springsteen. And he's also a composer. He even won an Emmy for his work with T-Bone Burnett on True Detective Season 1's soundtrack. But then you also have this woman who's, you know, known for her own compositions and like her own lane in jazz. So I don't know. What do you think about how the band interacts with what Lage is doing on this record?
Yeah, I think there's a sort of beautiful connection between him and his band that really allows for him to extend his net pretty wide sonically.
Yeah.
There's a great range to this record. You talk about Northern Shuffle. I mean, the distance traveled from Northern Shuffle to South Mountain is so vast. I mean, you've got one that is super soulful, the other nearly folkish. And talking about tone, I feel like his playing just like springs out of a lot of these songs. There's like very, very interesting sort of intricate sound beds that make way for his little, he moves through the nooks and crannies of these songs so, so effortlessly and travels so much terrain in doing so.
Yeah, Yeah, that's well said. I like the metaphor of nooks and crannies. And, you know, it's funny. The first time I listened to this record, for some reason, I only heard him.
Yeah.
I just, like, the guitar jumped out at me so much, even on the quiet songs. And there are quite a few quiet songs on this record. There's even a song called Hymnal, you know, and there is, as you said, a little bit of connection to that kind of like cosmic folk Americana-ish jazz that yeah. Bill Frisell, who he's worked with before, is like the god of, right?
Yeah.
Even in those quiet songs, there's something about his playing that does feel assertive.
Yeah.
Then when I came back to the record, that's when I started to hear the different parts. Hear the interaction with the rhythm section, hear those keyboards taking him in different directions, hear yeah. Levon's sax just entering in like a sneaky. I was talking about tone and voice as like being the guest at a party, and do you dominate or do you like hang in the background? And
right.
I think that Levon's saxophone is kind of like the guy at the party who doesn't talk all that much, but when he does, you're like, oh. Oh, yeah.
That was a great point, actually.
Right. Exactly. So it's really, I don't know if it's a testament to Lodge himself or just to the way this band has just gives each other so much respect, but it never feels forced. It doesn't feel like overwhelming, even though it's a big band, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talked about the fact that this is album 15 for him
right?
as a leader. I think when you have someone who is so competent and so confident in what they are capable of, it's very easy to settle in, to perform, to be yourself, to get in where you fit in, because there's like never a moment where he feels a need to dominate this record. His playing is just that sort of potent. It'll always catch your ear, to your point about the first time you hear it. It's impossible not to hear him at the center of these songs. It's just like, because of what he is capable of, everyone else is able to do what they do to the best of their ability.
Very well said. I have one last question for you about this record. Joe Henry said something about making this record with Julian Lage, where he said they were trying to kind of like strike a balance between the virtuoso side of Lage's guitar playing and the songfulness of the songs. Do you think they got there? Like, is there an example to you that like feels very songful?
Ooh, you know, I do think 76 towards the back half does feel songful. There are moments in there where it feels like a band that is like performing at the cantina in an old Western, but then it'll like randomly emerge into these beautiful jazz flourishes that pull you out of that. And it's like, oh, it's doing something completely different. I think he really has such an understanding of his instrument that he is able to just do whatever he wants on this record and make it sound all, like effortlessly beautiful.
That's Julian Lage, once called by our friend Nate Shannon, one of the breeziest virtuosos in jazz, with his new record, Speak to Me. Now we've got something completely different.
Yeah, to say the least. The Philly band Sheer Mag, some people may be familiar with them. Pretty notably, they've been independent to this point. Their new album, Playing Favorites, though, is the first on Third Man and their first since 2019. And it fortifies the sound that they've been cultivating since a trio of EPs they released in the mid-2010s. The album was initially a four-song disco EP, which there are traces of it on a song like All Lined Up. But I think everything they add is in service of this epic hard rock revivalism. And you've said you think of the band's tone as thrift store Hot Topic, which I think is great. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Well, two things I love, thrift stores and Hot Topic. So I guess what I meant by that phrase is that the Sheer Mag is definitely reaching back to the past.
Yeah.
You know, definitely connecting to garage rock, connecting to earlier eras in punk. Like, hey, there's a song on this record called Eat It and Beat It. That's got to be a reference to Blondie's Eat to the Beat, if only a sideways reference. They're not one of these bands that's like trying to recreate a vintage sound wholesale.
Yeah.
You can sort of see the edges, you know, see the rougher sides to what they're doing. It's always playful. It's always really fun. And that's the thrift store part, right? It's unpredictable. Yeah. At Hot Topic, you always know what you're getting. You know, you're going to get that Danzig t-shirt or whatever. If you get that t-shirt in a thrift store, it might have been cut up and made into, I don't know, like a bikini cover-up or something. And that's what I kind of think about Sheer Mag. Like, they're going to take me somewhere unexpected within the confines of what they do.
They used to get compared to Thin Lizzy a lot at the beginning. And, you know, I wasn't sure about that. But, you know, I think they have continued to move beyond any such expectations. I mean, it's heavy music with these power riffs, but it's got a pop center at it. I really think a lot of these songs are just so, so catchy.
Yes.
And I think even to your point, in all the nostalgia for rock music of the past, they are so clear about what they want to do in their songs that it's hard not to see their particular vision in any one of them.
I love the fact that the title track, Playing Favorites, is actually about being on the road and playing their favorite songs, you know? It just captures the joy of this band. But what did you think about the way they're kind of stretching their sound on this particular record, and particularly the presence on one track, Mechanical Garden, of the Tuareg guitarist Madhu Mokhtar.
Yeah, I mean, Mechanical Garden, it's funny. It starts off like just another Sheer Mag song, and then it morphs into something that is so much breezier. It's maybe the grooviest song in their catalog, dethroning Moonstruck from like seconds earlier.
Right.
I think it's the kind of stride made by a band that is completely understanding what they want to do with their songs. I'm curious, what do you think separates Tina's voice from like the other great like punk voices?
Tina Halliday, we're talking about the singer for Sheer Mag. I don't know if I would say what separates her so much is just like what makes her a perfect punk singer,
what distinguishes her.
We're back to that question of tone, right? Like she's right in there in the lineage with people like Kathleen Hanna, for example, right? And
for sure.
She's got that kind of bratty quality to her voice, that kid on the playground, ruling the playground kind of thing. She's the queen of the neighborhood, let's just say that. She's a rebel girl.
Yeah.
But I also think, and maybe this is how she's grown as a singer over the years, that there's a wisdom built into it now. And that's also reflected in the lyrics on this record, I think, you know?
Yeah.
This is an adult band. This is an adult record. It's not necessarily for punks of a certain age, but I think there's a maturity in the songwriting and in her voice now that I really value.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. There's definitely a mischievousness to her voice,
like
a defiance, which I think serves both like the bite and the propulsion of Sheer Mag songs.
Because those guitarists, man, those guitarists are... They are, I mean, I can totally see why they signed to Third Man, because I could just see Jack White standing in the back of the room just totally loving what's happening on that stage. You know?
Right. It's funny because you mentioned the guitarist, because I think specifically about that interplay between guitar and voice on their records. And I've always been struck by how present their music feels.
Oh, yeah.
Like... It feels in touch with like a tactile world that seems to like exist less and less these days, both in music and in reality. It's sort of funny in her lyrics. There's like pool playing and like brawls at the bar. They're taking cabs to the city, sharing a biscuit. And a lot of it's like hanging around a jukebox, like with other people in a public space. It's full of what feels like face-to-face interactions. There's this great lyric... I think from Don't Come Looking, and it's, I've been fighting shy now, but I'm on the mend and I'm with my friends. I'm feeling strong, closer to the peace I've been searching on. And to me, that sums up so much of what is happening in their music. Yeah,
and for me, that sums up punk in a lot of ways, too. I mean, if there's a punk tone, you know, I mean, there's lots of ways punk can manifest. But it is exactly what you're talking about. It's a voice in, I said a girl on the playground, but actually you're making me want to say it's a voice in a crowded bar, you know, in a space where there's like some other noise. Maybe there's a subway or elevated train, you know, overhead or something. You know, there's a rumble, there's noise. You've got to speak up. But you know, you're speaking to your friends. So you're screaming in the ears of your friends. That's the beauty of what Sheer Mag does.
100%.
That's Sheer Mag, and their new record is called Playing Favorites. We got a bunch more albums to share in our lightning round, and that's coming up right after this short break.
Welcome back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Get your quote at progressive.com and see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
Back, you know, there's so much good music out today and seemingly every Friday, but we're going to run through a quick list of some of our other favorites. Anne?
Well, I'm going to start with this album by Hannah Francis. It's called Keeper of the Shepherd. Hannah Francis is a Chicago-based composer, guitarist, dancer, a stunning vocalist and songwriter. I have to thank the music writer Josh Terry for turning me on to this artist in his newsletter, No Expectations. The minute I put on her song, the title track from this record, I was stunned, absolutely stunned. You could call her music freak folk, but it's really more monumental than most freak folk. There's shades of Sandy Denny, for sure, but also of 90s queens like Sarah McLachlan, or she's even been compared to Katie Lang. It's very mythic, and I just, like, dove into it.
For my first pick, I'm going with Yard Axe, Where's My Utopia?
We get down to the sound of a singular mind, and we like criminals when criminals are treating us kind for the subliminal...
On the heels of the Mercury Prize-nominated 2022 album, The Overload, the British band frees itself from expectations, making a self-described party album inspired by everything from disco to Afrobeat that is hookier than its post-punk predecessor.
My next pick is two albums actually being released basically together. They're by the pioneer of home cassette recording, Linda Smith. They recorded in the 80s and 90s, and they're called So I Liked Spring and Nothing Else Matters. Shout out to our colleague Lars Gotrich on this. I know he is a huge Linda Smith fan.
It was the night when you began to laugh and say that nothing else matters. It was.
If you love sort of 80s indie rock that's brainy and really charming, that is very lo-fi and yet has the heart and soul of, you know, a really smart person who loves melody and loves pop in a way, you'll love these records. Inspirations include the minimalist band Young Marble Giants, the English poet Charlotte Mew, and Smith's own work for the Ringling Brothers Circus.
For my second pick, the composer Niels Frahm returns to his roots on Day, his first album since 2022's Music for Animals. His music has grown more and more texturally complex over the years, but these piano compositions hone back in on his chosen instrument.
And finally, we want to highlight the new album from Mannequin Pussy. It's their fifth, and it's called I Got Heaven. These East Coast punkers are breaking big with this album. I think this is the one that might bring them to the national stage. It's got swoony guitar parts, sweeping vocals, and I think the potential to reach the same big audience that loves Olivia Rodrigo. And if you want to learn more about Mannequin Pussy, I encourage you to go to the New York Times and read the wonderful feature by our former colleague, Marissa LaRusso. Well, Sheldon, we've come to the end of our time together. It's always so much fun to talk to you. I love the way you think about music. Thanks for sharing this space with me today.
It's been such a blast, Anne. Thank you.
So if you out there listening in listener land would like to give us some feedback, you can write us at allsongs@npr.org. And if you like the show, please tell your friends and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/musicnewsletter. And I know you're going to want to do it because I wrote a whole damn newsletter about that Benson Boone song. Sheldon is running away, but before he runs away, he has a few more things he wants to tell you.
Please remember that if you want to listen to this show sponsor-free, you can support our work by joining NPR Music Plus. Just go to plus.npr.org/NPR Music or search for NPR Music in Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Joaquin Kotler and Saria Muhammad with editorial support from Jacob Gantz.
I'm Ann Powers.
I'm Sheldon Pierce.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. This message comes from Jackson. Let's face it, retirement planning can be confusing. At Jackson, we're working to make retirement clear for everyone, starting with you. Our easy-to-understand resources and user-friendly digital tools help simplify your entire experience. You can have confidence in your retirement with clarity from Jackson. Seek the clarity you deserve at Jackson.com. Jackson is short for Jackson Financial Incorporated, Jackson National Life Insurance Company, Lansing, Michigan, and Jackson National Life Insurance Company of New York, Purchase, New York.
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.